Well, this is fun, and I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I was in the Harvesters class years ago, and I backslid or something, and maybe I'm back. I don't know. But thank you. This is so much fun. When I start my biblical counseling classes, I'm the professor of the biblical counseling classes. I always start, well, we always pray first. That's been done. So then I start with a riddle or a joke or something funny, just and they with a lot of eye rolling because they're terrible. But today, I'm going to start the same way. I assume that many of you folks play golf, or at least you tell people you do, right? Okay. Well, you know there's a golfer's verse in the Bible, Romans, and of course Romans. So it has to be true, and it all is. But Romans 7:15, "For I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate." That's a golfer's verse. Just remember that. A friend of mine had that printed on golf balls, his own golf balls, and so because he said he never hits them where they're supposed to go, and he figures when another guy or woman hits them where he hits them, they're going to be over there looking for their ball, and they might find one with a verse on it to help them understand their problem. So anyway, so that's how we start a seminary class, too, with sillies. I wanted to take just a minute to tell you a little bit about the diploma in biblical counseling that God has caused to thrive at the seminary. 2 years ago was our first go at that. And so it's like, well, let's see how it goes. Well, God made it really go. It was wonderful. And we became family. Some of the students are here today. And thank you guys for your support. I saw you coming in. I don't know where you're seated, but thank you. Y'all are sweet to be here. Just wanted to tell you just a little bit about it, that I'm actually going to have you pretend you're in a seminary class with us. So this is a giant class, and there won't be a lot of class participation, or we won't get through the lesson. But I wanted to just fill you in on what's going on in the seminary. Randy Schlichting asked me to do that. And this week is a pretty good follow-up on what Randy talked about last week, the importance of lifelong learning. You're never too old to learn. And in fact, if you stop learning, something's not working right. It's okay, so we're just going to hope. And I doubt that you'll learn a thing from me today, but there's nothing wrong with having a reminder. How about a reminder? So that's what I'm shooting for. We have just completed our first two-year cohort and graduated 7 very well-prepared, dedicated lay counselors, and that's the goal, to graduate lay counselors. We train the students and hard, and we eventually test them in the field by working face-to-face. And we call it the practicum. At the end of the course, at the end of the 2 years, they go out and do 30 to 40 hours of face-to-face time with what we call clients, even though there's no exchange of funds whatsoever. This is just practice. About 3 years ago, when the Randy Schlichting and some of the other gentlemen that run the seminary approached me to head up a program, which was also going to include teaching all the classes, I said yes, but with one stipulation. The students must also have a good theological foundation. In other words, if they hadn't been through the other seminary theology courses, in my opinion, that needed to be a requirement. So these students not only take my classes, they take theology classes too. I mean, they really are buckling down. They're in school on Thursday nights with me and the other teacher 3.5 hours every Thursday night and do the homework for both classes. And so they have really made a commitment to dig in. So I know you're all just dying to sign up, just from what I just said. Those theology classes include topics like the doctrine of Scripture, hermeneutics, Old Testament survey, New Testament survey, the work of the Holy Spirit. That's just a few of the theology classes they take. And as they're taking one of my classes, they are taking a coinciding theology class. The counseling classes include topics like this, human development. This is going to sound so boring, but I'm going to get to the grit, and you'll like that. Human development, personal conflict, identity issues, and we will circle back to that topic in my lesson today, family dynamics, prominent life issues. I know that sounded so general, so here's that grit I mentioned. Misbeliefs that can often be a foundation for depression, anxiety, anger, self-esteem issues, guilt, shame, lying, addiction of all kinds, jealousy and envy, trauma, PTSD, eating disorders, OCD, ADHD, personality disorders like narcissism, borderline, antisocial, histrionics. That's just a tiny sample of the things that we look at and learn about and learn how to respond to when we meet people with any of those issues. We look very carefully at comorbidity. Co meaning goes along with. Comorbidity, for an example, means having more than one disorder at a time. An example of that would be a person that suffers from depression and or anxiety, and they self-medicate with alcohol. So now they might have an alcohol problem along with their depression or anxiety. Or perhaps a person that has anger that's out of control, and that anger might actually stem from untreated anxiety. So folks like that have what we call comorbidity. It's usually not just one thing. When people come in and say they're so ticked off at their husband because he puts the plates backwards in the dishwasher every single time, that's not the problem. The way he loads a dishwasher is not the problem. And I'm not going to tell you what it is because you have to come to my class to find out. Okay. So in following up with Randy Schlichting's presentation about the importance and the gift of lifelong learning, I thought I'd give you a taste of what it would be like to be in a seminary class. And I'm going to give you snapshots of several of the things that we study in the diploma in biblical counseling. You're at a slight disadvantage, or perhaps an advantage, because you didn't have to read the assigned 150 pages to get ready for this class. So you're either at a disadvantage or an advantage, and I think I know which one you're picking. But there's always one or two in a group that says, I don't need this. I didn't just fall off the turnip truck. No, nobody in here fell off a turnip truck. But we all live on planet Earth, and that is a tough address. That's a tough address. So, you know, we could all use some help here and there. So here we go. I opened the course with a talk about awe. A-W-E. Not the thing you say when you look at a baby. Awe. No, this is the big one. A-W-E, awe. And, of course, I'm talking about awe of God. What is awe, and who else could you possibly apply that concept to? Let me give you my definition. This is not a dictionary definition. This is another book's definition. This is just what I have put together because of who I believe he is. It's bigger than an overwhelming feeling of reverence, admiration, or fear, produced by an awareness and an acknowledgement of the attributes of the one who is truly indescribable, sovereign, perfect, holy, the creator of all things, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. And with my simple mind, though, I put it in another way, the same way I teach my students. We have a good time in there. And here's an example of some of the good times we have. When I talk about attributes of God, here's the way my mind works. God has never traveled. He's already there. He's always been there. He's never been late. He does not exist in the realm of time like we do. He's never asked a question he didn't already know the answer to. He's never needed an explanation for anything. He's never needed to read any directions or ask directions. And some of you don't either. Me either. He's never needed to read. He's never repeated himself like that. He's never needed to apologize. He's never not had time to listen to you. He's never let you out of his sight for one fraction of a second. He's never forgotten anything, you and your circumstances included. He's never not done the very best in all situations. He's never wondered if he was making the right decision. He's never not been in control of absolutely everything all at the same time. He's never been confused. He's never forgotten anything. He doesn't have to write down anything and refer back to it later. No sticky notes with God. He doesn't get hung up on what others think of him. He's always right, completely right, no exceptions. All of his thoughts are always holy. He's never had to figure out anything. He's never had to take in the facts and then decide. He's never not known an answer. He has never come to a realization and said, oh, now I get it. He's never picked door number two when it was door number one. He's never gained insight. He has never learned anything. He has never been taught anything. He has never assumed or presumed that something was other than it is. He has never been confused. He has never had doubt. He has never wondered about anything. He knows all outcomes. Things come about per his decree. He knows all secrets. Actually, there are no secrets to him. He has never said, well, let me sleep on it. He has never said, I'll take that into consideration. He's never asked why or who or what, or when, or where, or how. He always knows what happens next and everything after that. He has never had to try another angle. He knows all solutions to all things, and he is the solution to all things. He has never not recalled anything. Oh, golly. He has never repeated himself because he forgot he already said that. He has no use for alternatives. He cannot be surprised. He's never been surprised. He has never negotiated. He has never sought advice. Are y'all catching on to this? Okay. He's never had counsel outside himself. He holds all intelligence, all knowledge, and can't take in any new information. He has never had a fantasy, and he's never had new understanding. He is never not completely sure. There's never even a single question about certainty with God. And as my grandchildren have pointed out, God would not be fun to play hide-and-seek with. And he's no good at knock-knock jokes. If you start the joke, knock-knock, he goes, I already know who's there. So there's a couple of things that are not fun with God. Okay, and I realized before too long as a counselor, people had lost touch with even the things I just listed. They've lost touch with an awe of God. And how did I know that? From personal experience. I have lost touch with awe of God on several occasions. And if we really think hard about what I'm going to teach today, we do it much more often than we realize. We do it all the time. In fact, you right now do not have an appropriate awe of God. Nobody does. People who are angry or significantly disappointed are often not trusting God to handle whatever it is they're upset about. They want things to go their way. We really act out when we don't get our way. And do you know the definition of anger? I learned this at the first seminar I went to when I became a counselor. We're sitting there having our big dinner, paid a lot of money to go to hear this lady talk. She had a pad of paper by our dinner plates with a pen, and she came out before the dinner and said, write down what you believe the definition of anger is. Boy, I started writing. And I flipped a little page and wrote some more, and flipped a little page and wrote some more. I know that doesn't surprise you. And she came back out, and she said, anger is the way you choose to respond when you don't get what you want. And then she walked off the stage. I thought, wait, I paid a lot of money for this. Come back out here. Well, dinner was served, and then she came back out, and she said, did you catch on? Tear up your notes, and let's get down to what anger really is. It's all about the way you choose to act when you don't get what you want. I thought, oh, goodness. And that stuck with me. And I find it to be very, very true. And, of course, God used that as a tool to put in my tool belt to use with my clients. And I've been a counselor now for 25 years. Nobody has liked that definition. It's because it's true. And it's toe-stepping, isn't it? People who worry a lot and have various fears are often, not always, often not trusting God to take care of them or their circumstances. And if they trusted him, they would have a whole lot more peace going forward. Now, I'm going to throw a disclaimer out there about anxiety and depression, things like that. Never, never, never would I say, if you have anxiety or depression, it's only because you're not trusting God. Now, the way the brain can work, and that can be a part in some situations. If I have anxiety or fear, that is my deal. I'm not in awe appropriately at that moment because I don't suffer from anxiety and depression. So then I'm clear on what my deal is. But other folks really do suffer with genuine anxiety and depression that is caused by a misfire or the works in the brain aren't talking to each other well. For instance, we have neurotransmitters, brain chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, so many. Those are the three I hear talked about the most. So those are manufactured, and God gave you plenty, just like he made enough water. The only reason we have thirst is because man hasn't used his resources correctly. There's plenty of water. And you know there's exactly the same amount that he created. We haven't lost a single drop. I just thought I'd throw that in. I'm just in awe of that. Anyway, and he got on the cross and said, I thirst. And he made all that. Anyway, I digress. So just like in class. So man, the neurotransmitters, so they are manufactured. They have a system to go through in the brain. But there's also in the brain, to use layman's terms, a little vacuum cleaner. I don't use one at home, but I can sure talk about this one. This one is called the reuptake. in the brain, and as the neurotransmitters are emitted, or they're trying to be transmitted to go into different receptors in the brain. Think about a lot of little doors that different chemicals need to go behind to help the brain, help a person stay in equilibrium or in homeostasis for mood, sleep, energy, for all kinds of things. All those little neurotransmitting chemicals need to go in certain little receptors for everything to stay balanced. If the vacuum cleaner, the reuptake, is working a little too fast, it will suck up those chemicals before they get to go in their little doors. And then we'll have a deficit of serotonin or dopamine or norepinephrine or whatever neurotransmitter. Then the person will feel the results of depression or anxiety, and which can result in anger and all kinds of things. So when you if you take medication, and praise the Lord for that stuff, some people don't believe in it. I do. I think it's one of God's very precious gifts. When used appropriately, it will help slow down that little vacuum cleaner, that reuptake, to give the brain time to absorb all those beautiful chemicals that God made to keep our brain in balance. So there's a chunk of information for you. So I told you I was going to give you snapshots of the things that we study in class. And so I'm not saying that if you battle with something like depression and anxiety, that's a faith issue. It could be involved at times. But sometimes we just have brain chemicals that aren't going in all the right little doors, and we need something to help it do that. And I think, what a precious gift. I could go on and on listing different counseling issues that I've encountered, but they're all a direct result, in my opinion, of some of the problems or a loss of awe in God. So I want to jump right into what helps everybody. We can name all the problems, but when you can read those self-help books, and some of them are excellent because they point to God and they point to some answers. Some are just great about whining about the problems, and you don't get a whole lot out of them. And, of course, that's where you go when you're working hard with self-help. We can't do this by ourselves. So what helps everybody that I've ever met is this. And if you're a note taker, this is a simple one. T-T-T-T. There you go. People need to work on and remember to tell themselves the truth. If you're not telling yourself the truth, well, you're telling yourself something that's not true, and that's going to take you in the wrong direction. Now, you might want to change this to TMTT, telling myself the truth. It's real easy to tell other people what they need to think. And we don't do as good a job when we look in the mirror, but this is what I'm hoping to get you to think about, to lifelong learning. You know, we should ask ourselves probably every day, am I thinking right? Where did I put that? That's one of the worst ones, isn't it, in this age group? Where did I put that? Do you know how many of you have multiple pairs of these? Good, good, good. And no telling where this one will be an hour from now, but there's a pair. I typed this real big, so I might not have to use this. And if the light is good, y'all can relate, I don't always have to use them, so this is working. Great. And if I blow something, I'll put them on and see what it really said. Okay, this is the moment where it's revealed whether we are good candidates for lifelong learning. God has no need for the topic of learning, but we're just the opposite. Until we are completely conformed to the image of Christ, we are really good candidates for lifelong learning. Okay, so don't just think, I've done all that. No, you haven't. You by no means have done all that, because I don't see anybody that is conformed fully to the image of Jesus Christ in this room. That's not possible yet. The Lord has made me love learning. Even though I'm the professor for the class, I do all the teaching. I have to study and study and study and study to keep up on what's going on in certain arenas. For instance, the LGBTQXYZ deal. That change, that, well, yeah, it's growing, it's getting, and I have to study to keep up with what's going on and the best way to love these folks and to show them the beauty of Christ and that they don't have I'm going to start preaching. No, I'm not going to go in there. I like beginning my seminary classes with focusing on His mighty, almighty, immeasurable, immutable attributes. So we've got that. You get the flavor from my deal about awe and what we start with in there. I find that most believers that I've worked with in the last 25 years suffer with what you have and what I have, spiritual amnesia. That's just what we have. We have spiritual amnesia. Therefore, Why continue with lifelong learning? Because we have spiritual amnesia. They say they believe in God, the God of the Bible. They even say they know him, but their responses reflect something very differently, just as mine do. So here's an example. I could give you hundreds. I want to give you an example that actually caused me to not speak for a moment, which is means it must have been pretty shocking. A lady walked in my office. We prayed first, like we always do. And before I got the syllable of men out on amen on the prayer, she said this with an angry voice. Why hasn't Jesus ever done anything for me? And that really, I'm telling you, I've heard all kinds. I've had murders. I've had suicides. I've had child abuse. I've had, you name it. None of those stopped me cold. That one stopped me cold. Why hasn't Jesus ever done anything for me? So after I, you know, come on, you're supposed to say something. I knew right away that somebody had lost their awe. So I knew the goal in this counseling session right off the bat, to reintroduce her to herself and her condition and her need for him. She needed to be introduced to who she really was, because apparently she believed that she deserved certain things and that God owed her something. We worked on her theology and we poured it all over her pity party. And I'm so glad to report that she came after several sessions to see things differently. And her beliefs changed, which changed her thinking, which changed her feelings, which changed her actions. Now, I've just actually said a formula to you in code, so I'm going to give it to you straight. B-T-F-A, the letter B, and then T-F-A. Beliefs, which lead to your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions. If you're having a real struggle, ongoing struggle, we need to examine something. And it's often revealed, these struggles often most easily revealed in your feelings and actions. If those two aren't going well, need to come back and visit your beliefs and your thoughts that are a result, that result from those beliefs. The client that I just described had the belief that God owed her something. She needed transformation in the mind, as we all do. Romans 12:2, be transformed by renewal of your mind, B-T-F-A. Be transformed by renewal of your mind. So her misbeliefs were wrecking her thinking, which were wrecking her feelings, which were wrecking her actions. She took that action. I wonder where else did she say that? That's an action that shows what she thinks and believes. Why hasn't Jesus ever done anything for me? You know, it was real hard not to go, did you forget the cross? How about that one? You know, but I didn't. I didn't think that was the place to start. But I certainly did put it in there, I assure you. And so my first question to her was, well, what is it that Jesus is not doing for you that he's supposed to be? Let me hear his failures. Well, I know it was not hard to get her to do a quick little reset there, but it took weeks to help her quit being so angry about things that she was looking around her that her friends had going on that she didn't. We got a lot of envy and jealousy that walks in that office. A lot of poor me's. Well, let's not be too hard on this lady. You and I do exactly the same thing in different capacities, maybe. We all have to live by a healthy and true BTFA. And if things aren't going, if you are a grouch, you don't have BTFA in order. There is nothing to be grouchy about. So there. Now, I had a huge personal failure in the belief department, among many, several years ago about people who got divorced. I was raised with a wrong belief. Therefore, it caused me tremendous life pain because of a misbelief, but I didn't know I had a misbelief. And I'm going to tell you how that developed. When I was a little kid, very strong Christian family, very leaning toward the legalistic, I thought because I didn't do certain things, I was better than other people. That's been knocked out of me. But I really did believe that. And so along with that belief, and this will give you an example of the kind of teaching I got, I asked my parents, I was in the fourth grade, about 11 years old, 10 or 11, Yeah, 9 or 10. And I was sitting in the back seat, my parents in the front, just the three of us in the car. And I said, oh, can I go home with Carol Cudworth, ride home on the bus with her on Friday and spend the night? And that's just how we did it back then. You go home with a friend on Friday, ride the bus, and you spend the night with them. It was a great thing. We did it all the time. There was no audible response. My mother turned to my father so I could see her profile and read her lips. She looked at my dad. The eyebrows go down. She shook her head like this. And she mouthed the word, divorce. Did y'all get what I just said? Divorce. But she didn't say it out loud. She is so bad you can't say it out loud, apparently. What's a fourth grader supposed to think? Ooh. Now, I didn't know what the plague was, but that would equate to, like, the plague. So that was a whole discussion in my life coming up about divorce. That was it. So where do I find myself at age 28? My first husband abandons me? Yep. Uh-oh. Yeah, uh-oh. What do I think about that? Uh-oh. Where's that headed? Now, if there'd been repentance and we'd gotten some things worked out, we wouldn't be having this discussion about my misbeliefs about divorce. I guess I'd have learned it another way. But I learned it the hard way. I found myself divorced 10 months later. I divorced him. He wasn't coming home. Ever. He was going to stay with her. I got unchosen. But here's the bad thing. I thought God equally unchose me too. I was like that word you can't say out loud. And my church paid for me. I went to another church at that time to go to counseling. I could not pull out of the dark pit. I actually allowed the misbeliefs and the thinking that come along with something that wrong, that's awful. You cannot get divorced. God can't love you. He doesn't love you on earth. And, you know, the earth God says, nope, you're out. I actually transferred that to a holy God, that I was out. And I thought, I didn't know anybody divorced. And I figured I was the only one. Disgusting human being that I was. The first time I went in the grocery store after I got divorced, I couldn't look anybody in the eye. My self-esteem went, I had no self-esteem. And the first counselor was so sweet to point that out to me. You don't have low self-esteem. You have no self-esteem. That even hurt worse. So I was worse than I thought I was. First time I went in the grocery store, loaded that cart, I couldn't look the checkout lady in the eye. I just couldn't let anybody see this filthy, nasty loser. I left my groceries there and walked out. Now that is Satan at his finest. Because then, of course, I thought about ending my life. Those children didn't deserve. I had three children, a four-year-old, a three-year-old, and a newborn baby. And I was pregnant when the husband left us. They had an abandoning dad and a loser mom. They deserve better than this. And actually considered taking myself out. Well, God's in charge. So that didn't happen, as you can see. And that's a longer, another story. Anyway, look at how powerful a misbelief can be. It took 2 years with that one counselor who sat in a rolling chair, long red fingernails. I remember these two things. When I would say, I remember a whole lot of other things, but these were powerful, which I did not use this technique when I became a counselor. She would roll her chair when I would say, there's just no way God can love this. There's just no way. I messed up. She would slam her kneecaps into my kneecaps. This woman was intense. And her long red fingernails, she would take my hands and squeeze, and she'd say, don't you get it? God loves you no matter what. No, not that. Because I learned that divorce is for losers. It's awful. So bad you can't even say it out loud. God turned that around. It is not so bad. If for me, it was a gift. He set me free from a life of bad stuff. He set me free. And then 6 years later, he gave me this beautiful man sitting over here. One of those men sitting over there who was a real man. He loved Jesus first. And he has treated me like a princess for 33 years. In fact, I'm going to brag on him a little more. He will not like this. No. He's an architect. The room you're sitting in was his design. The chapel was his design. The atrium. So don't clap. He'll kill me. But he does not. You could take a tour of this whole place with him alone and you'd never know that. He's humble. And he loves his Jesus and he loves me. That wasn't in my notes. Thank you, Jesus. That's just coming out. So here's another snapshot in the counseling class. And I've told my class about him, and all the men in my class said, I want to be like your husband. I said, no, you don't. You want to be like Jesus. Let's don't get off here. Okay, so here's the deal. This awe of God, when you hold it up against misbeliefs, there's some other things you need to get straight about yourself, which God has gotten straight in me. Well, I got to check the time. Okay. There's something you need to know. There's a drawing I do for the class. It's just a hill with a cross on top. There's a line at the bottom with little lines all the way across, and that right now stands for about 7.5 billion people that populate the earth. You are one of those lines. So I draw a circle around one of those lines, and then I draw an arrow from that cross down to you. Now, there's something else. There's a lot of people on that line, so I draw a circle around a few other people, and I just call it them. Okay? Here's the problem. We are the problem. Romans 1:25. That's it. Romans 1:25. And we exchange the truth of God for a lie and worship and serve created things, them, instead of God, who is to forever be praised. Because if we do a certain way, I need to wear this so I'll look better. They'll think, what? We are full of it. We are full of wanting approval from others, approval to make ourselves feel better. We are full of the performance lies. I feel better about myself when I perform to this level. We love applause. We're just disgusting. Okay, do you feel better now? Now, I don't actually treat my clients quite that heavy, and I realize y'all are clients today. Free, by the way, no charge. But here's what we forget. Remember that cross that points down to you? You've got to get this. And this is what it took me 2 years and longer. I'm still getting it. To understand. You are, and I am, fully loved, fully accepted, fully approved of, fully forgiven, and spoken by Christ alone. Nobody else is going to tell you that because they don't feel that way about you. They can't give you that gift. Nobody can fully love you. Nobody can fully forgive you. Nobody can fully accept you. Nobody can fully approve of you. They haven't even gotten themselves straight yet. So how are they going to give it to you? Nope, there's just one source, that cross on that hill. And he's not on that cross. He got off of there because he died. Got in the tomb and got right back up to seal the victory. I mean, I get chill bumps when I talk about that. And that's the way we run this class. Why in the world do we care about what others think of us? Why in the world do we do this and that and this and that and try to control what others think of us? You can't control others' thoughts. Now, Satan gets involved, like my little story about divorce. My thoughts were controlled for a time about that topic, but God came, erased it, and put the truth in there. You have been scored on that cross. So one thing I love to tell my students, don't ever let anybody give you a scorecard. And when you allow yourself to be run by what you think others think, you are asking them to give you a scorecard, and then you try to live up to it. Seriously? Yuck. Just, yeah, I don't, you know, that's a real deep scientific word, yuck. But it just didn't work, folks. Who else are you living for besides Jesus? And if the answer's you, that's no good. And if the answer's them, that's no good. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and they worshiped and served created things rather than God, who is to forever be praised. Now, there's you a little dose of lifelong learning. Need to think about that all the time. Who am I serving here? Who am I living for? Who am I trying to please? Self or others? Wrong direction. Look straight up. That's the place to go. Let me tell you where I got that don't let others give you a scorecard. I was very close to my dad. He was a great teacher. And you talk about a man of God. That man was straight as an arrow. I know he sinned somewhere, but as a kid, I just didn't think so. And to this day, in fact, they said this at his funeral, and he would not have liked this. The preacher got up and said, I know I shouldn't say this, but I can't think of a sin I'm aware of in this man's life. My dad was something. He loved Jesus. And apparently he was in awe of God. So Dad and I are on Saturday afternoons after our house chores were done. Daddy and I would watch on the black and white TV, you know, which was about this thick and sat in the corner of the room. ABC Wide World Sports. I loved watching that with him. I don't know where my brother and sister were. Didn't matter. This was me and Daddy watching ABC Wide World of Sports. And the sport I remember, and the only sport I remember, don't know if it's the only one they showed or if I just have a small memory, the deal where the guys are on the two skis, they have no other equipment, and they go swoosh down the hill, and then the hill stops, and they're up in the air, and then they're back like this, and then they finally land and go swish. Well, the people at the bottom, the judges, there were no electronics to help people judge back then. They wrote with big markers on cards, and they would hold up their scores. And I guess somebody tallied it real fast. There weren't even calculators. There were big calculators where you punch in numbers and do like this. So anyway, they would hold up scorecard. And I watched this with Dad week after week, and we're going, I think he's an eight. And then we'd see what the judges thought. My dad turned to me one day, and he said, Rob, don't ever let anybody give you a scorecard. He said, you've already been scored. It's complete. It is perfect. And you were scored by his righteousness. Now that word, all that righteousness imputed to me by Jesus. I didn't quite get all that, but that was certainly a good foundational learning. Don't ever let anybody give you a scorecard. You've already been scored. Okay, lifelong learning. We just don't get that in one whack. We need to continue to remind ourselves. Refresh your minds with the Lord daily. See, now, look at Adam and that woman. Now, you think I just said that because I'm mad at her. No, I'm not. I'd have done the same thing. I'd have probably jerked the tree out of the ground and taken it home. I called her the woman because she wasn't named yet when she sinned. She wasn't named Eve until after they'd left the garden. So, little tidbit there. Now you're ready for Trivial Pursuit. You go home and do that. So, look what she did. They allowed temptation and lies to so easily demolish and derail their awe of God. And they had spent time with him in the cool of the evening in the garden, and they still turned on him. They took on a new belief that was not true. Everything fell. Everything had a curse over it now. Everything changed because they lost their awe of God and believed something else. Yes, beliefs, thoughts, feelings, and actions. You can just take a simple look at your own life. Most people are pretty good at expressing very strongly how they feel. If you aren't feeling strength emotionally and mentally, if you don't have the joy all the time, of the assurance and hope of eternity with your Lord, if you don't have peace in the midst of difficult circumstances, that's a signal that you need to go back to examine your awe of God. Go back and examine what you really believe. If you're operating under the misbelief that you just can't help it, it's too hard, I've been this way for so long, nothing's going to change this, then you really don't know who he is and his power. Oh, he said, can too change it. There's nothing he can't change, and there's no time limit. There's no too old. There's no too dumb. There's no too anything. He can do anything. Focus on what he can do, not what you can do, not what you want to do. If you're accepting of misbeliefs that are keeping you stuck, there's a verse we need to look at here, 1 Corinthians 10:13. Of course, she's saying to herself, why didn't you mark that? Well, because I didn't. I know what's in here. In fact, I pulled it up on my phone to read it to you on my phone app, which is over there. So hang on. Let me do 1 Corinthians 10:13. Here we go. It is going to require the big ones. I love this verse. I think I've worn it out in counseling. All right. So this is to apply to if you think you're stuck or if there's something in your life you just cannot break a habit, even habits of belief and thought. But usually it shows up in our behaviors, in our feelings. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. So you're not that special. It happens to a whole lot of people. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with that temptation, he will also provide a way of escape that you may be able to endure it. So nobody gets away with it in my office when they say, well, it's just too awful. I can't help it. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Yes, you can. If you'll go to God. You just don't know this truth. He will give you everything you need to not resist and not give in to that temptation. He'll give you all you need to get out of it. Every single time. But you do have to involve him, you know. If you rely on your own everything, that's not going to work. All right. So 1 Corinthians 10:13 was that scripture. Now here's I'm going to hit you between the business. Check to see if your hope is in the stock market. Is your hope in your own performance or based on the approval of others? Like, I'm having a good day today. Somebody called and told me they really love my chocolate cake. Why do you feel better after that? That was nice. But goodness gracious, we get a boost from things. You know, I remember an illustration. I don't remember who said this. Years ago, I remember the illustration in a Bible study was that we wake up with two cups every morning, like two big mugs, pretend. And we wake up with one. We have the choice to look at the one that's full of what Christ says about us, fully loved, fully accepted, fully approved of, fully forgiven. Nothing else can be added. I mean, it's full of Jesus. Or an empty mug going around all the day going, do you like my hair? Put plink, plink. How's my outfit? Did I do a good job? You know, and looking for others' approval to plink into our cup. Let me tell you what you'll have at night when you go to bed with that cup. A few things that rattle around that dump out while you're asleep and you need a whole new cup the next morning. What? There's just one cup, and it is full, and that cup should be running over. It should be running over. Could a self-examination reveal your insecurities and show you where you are not believing and resting in his approval, acceptance, forgiveness, and love, and his grace? Then I want you to think about this. It's sort of like a thermometer about how you're doing. That's a thermometer for how you're able to extend grace, acceptance, approval, forgiveness, love. If you can't accept it for yourself, how are you going to have a tank full to give away? So if you're really, really hard on yourself, chances are you think pretty tough things about others too. Or you're in that ugly game of thinking everybody's better than you. They're both no good. So I want you to, I'm winding down here. Don't forget BTFA. And don't forget Romans 1:25. And they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served created things instead of God, who is to ever be praised. Fully loved, fully accepted, fully approved of, fully forgiven. Fully, no matter what. So that's a taste of the work we do. Oh, and don't let anybody give you a scorecard. That's a taste of the work we do in the course of biblical counseling. And of course, we take these truths and apply them to all those hurts, all the wounds, all the sadness, all the sickness that people will come to a counselor with. And sometimes the counselor can tell it in people and go, come here, we need to talk. You look like you hurt. And everybody hurts, so I'm never wrong. You can do that on anybody and score on that one. Anyway, so that's a taste of the work we do in seminary for the diploma in biblical counseling. I have room for 3 or 4 more students. Hint, hint, hint. Lifelong learning. Hint, hint, hint. So let's put those two together. If you think you might be interested, let's talk. Nobody's too old. I had people in their 70s. In my class last time. It was awesome. I'm 68. I have another woman my age that has joined my class this time. The class starts on August the 11th. If you have any questions, please get hold of me. How do you get hold of me? Just come up here and grab me. Just if you want to know anything else, you could go to the Metro Atlanta Seminary website and look it up. And there are other classes, not just mine, but forget those. I'm finished. I think some folks are going to share with us from this side, and we'd love to hear what they have to say. But thank you. You've been a great class.